Welcome back to episode 62, and in a bit, we'll hear again from Jay and Heather Thomas, who you met in last week's episode. Before they join back in, back to the journey. Since I had a background in education, the wing commander asked me if I would be willing to represent the base on the Great Falls School Board. We were allowed a membership spot on the board because we had a fair amount of students in the secondary school system. If you've been associated with or been on a school board, there is one issue that comes up at some point. My first meeting is coming up, and I'm getting a heads up that the press will be at the meeting. Why? Because the school board was considering banning a book. I tried to sit on the end out of camera view. Alas, since I was in uniform, the TV crew decided I would be perfect to be in the piece. That aside, the experience was both interesting and useful in meeting others in the community. It was not long after I was on the school board, I was contacted by the governor's office to seek my agreement to sit on a special commission to study what could the state do to better prepare Montanans for higher education and, more importantly, keep them in the state after graduation, because a lot of people want to leave. This was very interesting. There are provosts from universities, secondary school teachers, and leaders from across the Montana economy. Our work was well under a year, and at the end of the day, we made recommendations that, in my view then and my view now, were in some measure common to any way to better prepare citizens. And at the same time, the bigger challenge was how to provide better opportunities in Montana to keep graduates in the state. Growing up in a rural small town in northern New York State, and it was in some ways similar because some just can't wait to get out and experience more than what they know. The preparation secret is no secret at all. The education system has to do a better job of teaching students the basics and, more importantly, I think, how to think. These experiences were good learning platforms as well as a way to contribute to Great Falls and Montana beyond my military responsibilities. Back on base, after-work events at the club were weekly opportunities to build community, and with the creativity of the club manager and the marketing team, a lot of work was done behind the scenes to bring excitement for attendees. We also had family events at the child and youth centers as well as in the old theater. Folks across the squadron participated in helping out, including me. Well, they corralled me to help out, and one year I was dressed up like the Grinch for a family holiday event. Either we didn't have a Santa costume, or someone was trying to tell me something. I'm posting a photo for your amusement. Heather Thomas recalls the building of community in some of these events, and we'll hear from her again now. Heather, there were a lot of activities on base, too, because the club was the central focus point for social interaction across the entire base. And I was going to ask you, like, there were so many activities that I remember. What was some of your favorite or memorable events that we had at the club?
Oh, man, our club was so good. Maybe it's because we were also geographically separated, being so far away in Montana from almost everything else in America, that we were all a big family anyway. It was kind of a tight-knit community. But the club, I feel like there was something nearly every weekend. But we had these huge events for every holiday imaginable. And I just loved being there. I thought it was so much fun. And probably my favorite event was a St. Patrick's Day event that we had. And I can't remember all the details of what happened that night, but there was at the end, there's a scavenger hunt. And everyone was lined up. They asked for people to come from each squadron. And I went up for our squadron, and there was a scavenger. They give you a list. Or actually, they didn't give us the list in advance. So they would call out an item, and then you would run out into the audience and find someone who had that item and bring it back up to the front. And it was in sort of like a musical chairs kind of thing, is the last person who made it back up to the front was out. And so all these people came up, and we would go out and collect, you know, like a safety pin or a quarter or just little things. And some of they got harder as it went on, and I just kept progressing through. I don't know how. I guess our squadron really stepped up and had some things with them. And the last item was a men's necktie. And so there was me and one other person left, and I ran out, and no one was getting their necktie off fast enough for me. There were people who were wearing one, but no one was. And so there was a colonel sitting near the front, and he was trying, and I was like, just come with me. And so I grabbed his tie, and he ran up with me, and that counted, and I won. And I had no idea what the prize was, but that didn't matter. I just wanted to win, and I did. And the prize was a giant, like, beer bottle that you keep coins in. So we still have that somewhere with coins in it.
Nice.
It was so fun. And I, at the end of it, Jay was like, I can't believe you just brought him up there with you. I was like, well, he was having a hard time getting that tie off, and I really wanted to win. So he was a good sport.
That's awesome. I mean, I talked about the marketing team, and Stacy and her team were just so amazing with the unique events that they planned both at the club and across the rest of the activities. So I agree that there were some fun ones. I vaguely do remember that event as well. So I want to thank you for sharing that story with us. It was building events like that to focus on our community and creativity across the organization that were keys as to why we competed and won as the best sized services squadron in Air Force Space Command. The next step in the process is the arrival of the Air Force team, and it's not too long afterwards, yet there is preparation to do. The Air Force team is made up of both evaluators from within the services community, as well as from the National Restaurant Association. This partnership was good for the Air Force and our ties to the industry, since our clubs, food service facilities, and dining facilities cut across the entire unit. In addition to the preparation by the squadron, as I mentioned earlier, they look for the support level of the wing leadership and other organizations across the base. They do a lot of interviews, focus groups, and of course, evaluations of individual facilities. In addition, there is, as you would expect, an in-brief and an out-brief for the team. The in-brief, of course, is expected to be done by the squadron commander at some point. We're assembled in the wing conference room with the wing leadership, all the group commanders, and the senior leadership of the services squadron. To kick off the in-brief, we had two of our most junior airmen give presentations on the mission of the squadron and to share the meaning of our newly minted squadron patch. Last week, I posted that description in the episode photos. I left the preparation of these two airmen to the enlisted leadership, and they were prepared. They showed great poise and professionalism. They were awesome. It was a hard act to follow because I'm supposed to be next. My job is to best portray the outstanding work of the women and men of the squadron. And since we were competing across the entire Air Force with the other major command winners, we had to stand apart. For us, we did have a unique mission because of the location of our base and our renewed focus on guest service. So I decided it was time to do something that I have done before. Before I go further, you never know when or if you're going to include this in the scenario of a speech, prepared or not. And sometimes I've included it, and sometimes I haven't. My key is, at the best I could, is to read the room and then figure out whether the furniture will support the plan. If you're familiar with the movie Dead Poets Society, there is a point in the movie where Professor Keaton, played by Robin Williams, wants his students to look at the world around them from a different perspective. And it is this movie that was the impetus for this scenario. I put my hands on the edge of the table to see how solid it is. I jump up on the table and let me have Lieutenant Colonel Jay Thomas share what happens next.
So that was a very eye-opening experience for others. The part that you're talking about specifically is there's a point where you were giving your speech about how we have to look at things from a different vantage or a different perspective. And you pulled a lesson there or a piece there out of the movie The Dead Poets Society, where you actually get ready to make your big finishing pitch and you actually stand up on the table. Now, I'd seen this done. I was fortunate that I'd seen you do this a couple of times, so I was prepared for it. But some of the other senior leaders in the room and even some of the inspectors that we had were not prepared for this. So as soon as I realized what was about to happen, first of all, I grabbed onto the table to make sure that the table didn't give way. So once I felt that was stable, then I saw you stepped into this chair. You're still giving your speech. Everybody's getting motivated and inspired. And then you put your foot up on the table. And I remember looking at our group commander, who was your boss at the time. He looked over at me and his eyes got so big, like, what is about to happen? And so I just kind of looked at him and smiled with that look of, sir, it's going to be okay. I know what he's doing. So you climbed up on the wing commander's conference room table, and you're working your way down the table talking about how we need to look at things from a different perspective, and particularly from a standpoint of guest service, how we deliver guest service within the squadron. And honestly, I think that was a pivotal point of making a connection for folks to really see how passionate you were about the squadron being successful and delivering that quality of service and that guest experience that you laid out as an expectation for us.
Well, yeah, well, thank you. I remember it well, too. And I remember that I didn't see Colonel Graham, the group commander. I did see Colonel Deppy, and his expression was about the same. Like, I think he was thinking, should I stop him or what is really going on here? Because he had never seen me do this. Once I was up on the table, and I don't normally do this part because I normally stand in place, I start walking toward the Eubank team, who was seated at the end of the table next to the wing commander. This was definitely the more surprising part because people had to move their water glasses as I took 3 or 4 steps at the most down the table. My message was, as Jay said, we look at guest service from a different perspective than others. I hopped down and continued the rest of the presentation. In going through my photos, I found a photo of me on the table during this presentation, and I'm going to post that in the episode photos as well. I hope you'll enjoy it. All in all, it was a very good day for the 341st Services Squadron, and the visit goes pretty well, at least from our vantage point. About this time, we get a new group commander as well. Colonel Graham's time is up, and he did take very good care of my squadron and me personally. In comes Colonel Barry Kistler. He reminded me a little like Colonel Stripmatter and always had a smile for everyone. He was very positive for the group, differently than Colonel Graham was. So we wait for the news, and we hope it's good news, and yet, at the same time, I need to prepare the squadron for the answer whichever way it goes. And it's really not a long wait. By mid-July, we know that we win the Air Force Major General Eugene Eubank Award. That same year, the Personnel Squadron also won the Air Force Award as well. It was a great year for the 341st Support Group. This is the first time that Malmstrom wins this prestigious award, and it truly was one of my biggest moments of pride for our team. We receive accolades from across the Air Force, the command, and around the world. The awards ceremony will be at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Of course, we can't bring everyone, and we do bring as many as we can to the event. In the photos, you'll see me, along with Colonel Deppy and Colonel Kistler, walking up from our table to the dais under the swords of the Honor Guard as they announced the 341st Services Squadron as the winner. Behind me is then Lieutenant Jay Thomas, who you've heard from in the podcast. In the presentation photo, you'll see one of the airmen who made the presentation to the Eubank team. Having served with the senior leadership on the Air Force Services staff, knowing them made this an especially satisfying accomplishment. Since everyone couldn't travel to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for all the obvious reasons, on our return, we had a presentation ceremony at the wing headquarters, and you'll see the actual trophy. Then, we had a squadron picnic to celebrate. With very few exceptions, we made the difficult decision to close as many facilities as we could for just 2 hours for our teammates to get together. By chance, the event coincided with a visit by the Air Force Space Command commander, so the wing commander comes out to the picnic area with General Eberhardt on a golf cart. What happens next is reminiscent of what happened at Air Combat Command all those years ago. As General Eberhardt and Colonel Deppy disembark from the golf cart and head over to me, Colonel Deppy starts to introduce me and General Eberhardt interrupts him and says, "Hi, Tom. Congratulations. It's really good to see you again." What Colonel Deppe didn't know was that I had met General Eberhardt when I was at Air Combat Command. The talent of general officers that have crossed my path during my career and remembering people's names is something that I envy. You may recall that 2 weeks ago I mentioned that there were some unusual comments made when we won the award. There is a reception ahead of the awards dinner, and several of the officers who knew me before my assignment at the University of Texas would say, "Oh, I thought you retired," or, "I'm surprised that you won since you've been out of the career field." And while I pretty much shook this off, in hindsight, it's still a bit curious. And in some ways, it makes a little sense because I had less than 2 years at Randolph Air Force Base and 2 years at Osan Air Base in Korea, and that was my only base-level experience since being commissioned 15-plus years ago. And so I guess it makes some sense. Alas, this is an award that is all about the squadron and the people who worked hard every day to meet the mission. Command is a challenging job and one of the most rewarding ones, and this was one of those rewards. In addition to the squadron being named the Air Force Space Command Eubank winner, I was also named the Air Force Space Command Senior Military Manager of the Year. This is the award that is for field grade officers, similar to the Operations Officer of the Year award that I won during my time at Osan Air Base. And while I did not win at the Air Force level, leading my squadron was certainly the bigger highlight, to be sure. On the other hand, it was my fourth and last major command award in my career. Jumping ahead for a year, we win the Eubank Award for the command in the subsequent year, as well as the command awards for marketing and the dining facility. Montana has so much to offer within a reasonable driving distance from Great Falls. It's a beautiful part of the country, and while I didn't get away as much as I would have liked, I want to bring back Heather Thomas to share some of their experiences and what were their favorites. So Heather, what did you enjoy the most about traveling around from Great Falls?
Oh man, we did some really fun stuff. I often look back at that and think, how did we do all of that? Because it was before we had a cell phone or GPS. We just had like an old Atlas and we just get in the car and drive. But we went over and over again to Glacier National Park because it was definitely our favorite spot. It was just so beautiful and it was unlike anything I'd ever seen growing up on the East Coast. The snow there, you know, you would start out at the bottom of going to the Sun Road and it would be warm and sunny. And by the time you got to the top, you're, you know, dressed in shorts and a t-shirt and there's snow everywhere. And you're like, what's happening? Right. I've never experienced anything like that being from the East Coast. And so it's definitely our favorite place to go. But we also, you know, just would go up into Canada. It was a lot easier to do that then. And but our favorite, I think my favorite trip was we were going to Glacier and we were going to spend a weekend. I believe it was probably our anniversary. And we just found this little roadside Airbnb. And so we stopped. And of course, there, you know, there's rooms available. And so we stayed there. And the little guy who he was an older gentleman who owned the place. And he was just kind of flying by the seat of his pants on everything. And it was very clear, but he was so kind. And so he said, you know, there's breakfast in the morning. And so we were like, okay, where do we go? And he's like, well, I own the gas station in the front of the parking lot. And so we were like, great. And so that's all he told us. And so the next morning we get up and go into the gas station. And sure enough, he's got like a little grill set up in there. And he said, you know, what do you want for breakfast? And we asked if there's a menu and there was not a menu. He just said, what do you want for breakfast? And that's what I'll cook you. And so it was just like this experience that was so unreal. And we just thought that was the coolest thing. And so then Jay's parents came to visit a few weeks after that. So we took them back. Like we were like, you're never going to believe what happens here. Like you pay $50 for a whole cabin of your own for the night. And then in the morning you go in and he just cooks you whatever you want for breakfast. And so we really loved that trip and we liked taking people back to him so that they could just see that this is really like the coolest place.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, I think that's true. In my travels, I've experienced the mom and pop places that are really quite amazing. And it's very different than what you would otherwise experience. Thank you again, Heather, for sharing those experiences with us today. earlier in 2001, we did have some sad news for our family. My dad, who had retired to Arizona after my mom passed in 1986, died in the early part of 2001. It was after my grandmother passed and her wishes that we liked the idea of having a memorial service a little later so people didn't have to make immediate plans and rush to some location. And since he died in the winter, it would be tough getting to Long Lake, New York, where the family plot was. So we huddled and we came up with a date in the early spring. Dad had pre-arranged for cremation, and all that was left to do was make the final arrangements in Long Lake. The challenge was that we didn't know where he had made the arrangements. So my brother was able to go to Arizona and help with the closing out of his apartment and so forth. The first thing we needed was to find the will and the documents for the cremation. I knew that I was the executor, and yet I didn't have a copy of the documents. From my experience as mortuary officer, I also knew that we had to move somewhat quickly. After a reasonable period, we couldn't find the document, and so I started to call the funeral homes to see if they had a record because it was prepaid and they likely would know that they did. By chance, the first place I called was the right place. Since it was prearranged, all we had to do was get the cremains to a mortuary in Long Lake and it could be taken to the cemetery. Interestingly, after I learned he had made the arrangements, their actuary was actually pretty accurate. The cost compared to when he made the pre-arrangements, which was quite a number of years earlier, came out about even. Anyway, so we had the plans to go to Long Lake, and now, as you know, nothing's easy, right? There were people from both sides of the family that were planning on making the trip up to Long Lake, and there is a snowstorm that prevented people from coming up to Long Lake. Some of the children and some of the spouses actually made it. We had a short ceremony in the church where my parents had attended when they lived in Long Lake in the late 1950s. I didn't know what to expect at the actual gravesite because the ground was still somewhat frozen. Alas, it is in northern New York State, so they do know what they're doing. There was a hole at the family's plot, 6 feet under, and at the bottom of the hole was a little blue box. And now, this is where I could have done much better. I didn't check with the funeral home in advance at Long Lake, other than to make sure that that inn was taken care of before our arrival. I looked down, and on the little blue box is the postage meter in the upper corner. I kind of roll my eyes at myself, and well, it's done. My sister had purchased roses for each of us to put on the gravesite, and after the ceremony, we went to a little restaurant not far from the cemetery. The family plot is in Long Lake because, as you remember, Jean Marie had to be laid to rest back in 1959, and it's not an easy place to get back to. I have been back, as you'll learn later, in the journey, and before that, I had not been there since I took Mom a short time before she passed. Now, here's where it gets a little bit curious, at least from my vantage point. And I don't know how others felt in my own family, nor others in a similar situation. What went through my mind then, and has gone through my mind sometimes since, is that I was an orphan before I was adopted. And after both of my adopted parents passed, as silly as it sounds, it's like you're an orphan again. Now again, maybe it's just me. Or maybe it's just me because of my experiences in my life. I do know that these two people, William and Barbara Terwilliger, made a difference in the lives of me and those others that were adopted into the Terwilliger family. While I'm sorry to end on a sad note, we're at the close of this episode. Thanks again to Jay and Heather Thomas for their contributions to the podcast, and thank you for continuing to tune in as we move through the journey. Next week, we'll still be at Malmstrom, and you'll hear again one more time from Jay Thomas. And maybe, just maybe, some of my listeners will do something unique this week. Stand on a chair or table safely, wherever you are, and then look around. How different is what you see from where you were on the floor? Looking at things from a different perspective, at work, at home, and in society, is not a bad thing. How you see things from these different perspectives is in some ways how I've tried to share my perspective of my purple rain and my rainbows in my own life, in hopes that you might see that the lens you look through might be more like a kaleidoscope, shifting and changing as you look through it. I hope you keep warm as autumn sets in wherever you are. Have a great week.